Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Coleman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly. This episode will be previewing the match for Fulham against Brighton and Hove Albion on the road at the Amex Stadium. This is a huge Friday night match for Fulham. Fulham have won 3 on the bounce. Can they make it 4? We will be going through that shortly in this 60-minute episode. And while I wait for my Cottage Talk co-host to join me, I am actually going to be playing an interview done earlier today with the Fulham head coach, Slavica Jokanović. Again, I want to thank Fulham Football Club for sending me the audio clip, and here it is.
Slavica, 3 wins in succession. Does that mean the pressure is off a little bit, or are you still fully focused on winning the final games in the run-up to the end of the season?
Football is always, you need to play against some kind of the pressure. We are not still... We are not safe, and we need to continue to play our finals. It's next final is for us will be tomorrow night, and we need to be ready and arrive with desire and with concentration and with ambition for win the game.
Brighton had a great away win at the beginning of the week, and they're desperate for an automatic promotion place. But Fulham can go there and play with some confidence, with 3 wins, and also a little bit of freedom, perhaps, as the pressure will be on Brighton.
We are under pressure too, and this is normal. It's I'm going to repeat, we don't made the job over still. It's generally... We are still fighting for don't be relegated the team, and it's still we are in the war, and still it's front of us another final. Now we need to understand what is kind of the situation. No, it's not the same play against Brighton in October, but it's a play now 5 games before end of the season where they desperately need 3 points. It's another result, it's not enough for them. We need to interpret it, and we need to understand this kind of the situation and find the advantage in this moment. It's we try assess them, we try scouting how they are, what they are doing in the field. Our ambition is arriving tomorrow night at the in Brighton for looking for 3 points.
Tom Kenny was missing on Saturday because of injury at Preston. Michael Maddle also was injured, and Rowan Ince is not available for selection tomorrow evening. How are Tom and Michael? Are they fit or in contention?
We are still assessing them. We believe they're going to be very soon available for back in the team, and it's like small things, but it's so many games in this moments. All the 3 days we are in competition, and it's exist possibility for next game against Ipswich. Some of these players can be available for help us.
Emerson Heinemann came in on Saturday and played a good game for you in a slightly different position for him, but also scored the winning goal. How good was that for him, for his confidence, but also for you to know that you have goals coming from other areas in the team other than maybe Ross and Musa, who have scored most of the goals, and from Scott also?
It's a good moment for Emerson. It's young boy, it's very talented. I didn't find so many minutes for him this season. Like all the us, like all my players, like all the players in the world, he has some traits and some weaknesses. And generally it's space is front from him for improve. It's very intelligent in the goal, technically very good player. And this goal give him still more confidence and still more push for working more harder and for try be more important what is actually right now in this squad. Generally it's good news for us what different players start score the goal. It's I really was very happy with Ross and Musa work last game. They didn't score the goals, but they are participating, are working with the team very hard, and this is one of the ways how Fulham have win the games.
Over 2,000 fans, allocation sold out tomorrow evening. The fans give you a fantastic boost away from home as well as at home. How important can they be tomorrow?
They are always important, and it's generally it's nice news for us because we're gonna play in front of 2,000 or more of 2,000 our people, our traveling fans. We are our obligation is be concentrated and put in the field our maximum what we can do in this moment. And I am sure these people come to with desire to Brighton with desire for see some full-on victory. And our obligation is it's doing everything for try and fight it.
We wish you luck tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we are back, and that was an interview done earlier today. We are doing the show on Thursday, and this was an interview done with the Fulham head coach, Slavisa Jokanović, as always, by Director of Communications, Sarah Brooks. I want to thank the club for sending me the audio, as always. We could play at the beginning of the show, but before we talk about the audio clip, I have to welcome back my Cottage Talk co-host back to the show, Mr. David Holly. How you doing?
Hi, Russ. Good to be back. Hope you're slowly coming up to terms with things and feeling a little bit better each day. We've had a lovely sunny, warm day here in England. Nicest day of the year so far. Hope everything's getting better for you over there too.
Well, actually, it is a nice day here. I'm looking out. The sun is bright here, and it's one day at a time, my friend. It's one day at a time. And every day is a little bit better, but it's simply one day at a time for me. But I thank you for checking up on me and your friendship. You've been a great friend during this period, but always have been a very good friend. Enough of that. Let's talk about the audio clip. What did you get out of Slavisa's discussion again with Sarah today?
Well, I did manage to see, I didn't listen to the actual interview or anything, but I did manage to see all the notes on Twitter earlier. So I was aware of kind of, you know, some of the things that were said. Obviously, it's good that, you know, we're focused still, hopefully. We're not taking the foot off the gas because although things are a lot better than they were a week ago or so, still, you know, we have to be sure and just get to the end there. We're not so much in limp home mode anymore, are we? Anymore.
No.
Not quite as much. We've kind of got up into a higher gear, thankfully. So, you know, the finishing line and home is a lot closer than it was, thankfully. But, you know, it's an important game for both teams, and I think Slavisa was highlighting it. And the impression I get in some ways is that I think it's more pressure, really, on Brighton in some ways, because we're kind of in a fairly safe position now. We've done the hard work getting the three wins on the trot, whereas they, you know, they're competing with the top teams in the division, and they need the points a lot more, really, to maintain their position, I think. I mean, obviously they had a good result in the week, getting a win there, but they, you know, it's tight at the top, and if there's any chance of automatic promotion, obviously they want to grab it with both hands. But if not, finishing third or fourth gives you the better kind of draw in the playoffs as well. So I think the pressure is on them as much as anything. And I think Slavisa is very keen to point that out, that, you know, although we're not taking it lightly, you know, Brighton are under pressure. And you know, they're expected to perform, obviously, in front of their own fans. There's a lot of expectation. So, you know, if we can mess up their game plan, if we can nick something, you know, they're going to be struggling.
It's a great point, David. It's still a huge match for Fulham because we're not safe yet. Let's be honest here. And I think he wants to make sure to emphasize that it's a huge match for Fulham. But it is also a massive match for Brighton and Hove Albion. They're trying to get one of those spots for automatic promotion. They can't afford to lose. They need to take all 3 points. A draw isn't terrible, but they need all 3 points. So this is a massive match. And I'm glad that you brought that up, David, because say we get up on them, they will be feeling the pressure. So this is a very interesting matchup tomorrow. I look forward to doing the show with you because I was thinking about both teams and how important it is to both teams. But I'm glad that you really emphasize and we're discussing how important this match is for Brighton. It's a double-edged sword. You know, you could think, well, you know, they're going to be more focused because they need the points, but they also could be nervous, you know, of making a mistake. So it's a massive match. It'll be interesting to see how they come out along with how Fulham play, because will they rise to the occasion or will they feel the pressure? It's actually a very interesting match. All right, my friend, another thing to come out of the audio clip, and you've already seen on Twitter talk about some of the players that are going to be missing. We already knew about Rohan Ince, and it looks highly unlikely that we're going to have Michael Mallow or Tom Kearney, and we'll talk about that in just a moment because I really want to focus on those three players in the Cottage Talk Roundtable, and I want to start with Rohan Ince. I want to get your thoughts on this because he really has played well lately, David. He can't play because obviously he's a Brighton & Hove Albion player. How much of a loss will Rohan Ince be in this match for Fulham, and who do you think takes his place?
Yeah, for me, it's quite a big loss because sadly we've had a bit of stability there. You know, Parker and him have played the last three matches together. We've won all of them. All season we've been interchanging our central midfield. We've never really had a settled central midfield, bar the initial spell, I think, when we had Tunnicliffe and O'Hara were literally much there for, you know, for the first maybe third of the season. That was the only other time we were settled. Apart from that, we've had all sort of combinations of Parker, O'Hara, Baird, of course, Tunnicliffe at times, and you know, Kearney's played a couple of times as well, and anyone else I've forgotten for this minute. But you know, it's always been kind of pick any two from four or five, really. Matilla, of course, had a run as well, a couple of games there. So it's a big disruption to what we've been doing, and so there is no like-for-like replacement for Rohan Ince. There really isn't. But the person who probably offers, I would have thought, the kind of closest thing to him, I don't know, I've been thinking about this, it may be Chris Baird, because...
Interesting.
You know, he was a central defender, of course. You know.
Right.
So, although he's not as physically imposing, he's still, you know, he's pretty good in the air. He's pretty good in the tackle. And so, if he wants to play that kind of sort of, you know, game that we've before, where someone's in there to disrupt the play and get the ball to other people, Baird could be your man, I think. Baird also is, you know, he's arguably a better passer. He looks for the quick pass, but... You know, he's been sitting on the sidelines for a couple of weeks. He had an injury. We saw him come back last week, I think, off the bench. And I'm trying to think of, you know, if he wants to play this sort of fairly defensive game, I think probably, you know, Baird is, out of all of them, much as it's harsh on, you know, others like Tunnicliffe and, you know, and of course people like, I suppose, O'Hara especially. I mean, Tunnicliffe could play there, but then, of course, someone else would play somewhere else. I mean, I think, you know, with LVC back, if he wants to start LVC, then maybe he could move Tunnicliffe inside as well. So probably
I was thinking that,
Tunnicliffe.
David. Yeah, I was actually
probably
thinking
probably
about
Baird or Tunnicliffe, really.
Yeah. Because I was thinking that Tunnicliffe could potentially play the role, because if you have LVC back, just as you said, you slot him in, you just move the pieces around. That's a potential. But David, you know, it's very interesting that you say Chris Baird, because... Listen, it would be an old central midfield. You would have Chris Baird and Scotty Parker, but I think that could potentially work, David.
It's difficult. I think the key will be as to who else, if there are any other changes he wants to make. I think, you know, if he feels LVC is ready to start, because he only made a very brief cameo last time, then that makes things a bit easier, because LVC is, I think, more suited to playing that that role on the right, much more than Tunnicliffe. And then that gives him Tunnicliffe to put in the middle. Tunnicliffe is, I suppose, you know, he's pretty similar to Rohan Ince as well. He's probably, he's not quite as imposing again, but he does run around and, you know, makes a nuisance of himself. So, you know, if LBC, I think if LBC is ready to start, he'll play Tynecliffe in there maybe. But because it seems that Tynecliffe is kind of the, you know, he's pretty much in favour. He does seem to start most games. And then he'd keep Baird back maybe to replace Parker if Parker gets tired, you know, because he's still, you know, coming off the back of three games on the trot. If LBC is not fit to start, then, you know, maybe we'll see Baird in there and Tynecliffe will stay right midfield.
Okay, very good, David. And that would be in a 4-4-2. Let me throw another scenario, a scenario that you would like. But, again, it would be interesting how this would work. Well, let's say Slavisa says, you know what, I'm going to play the 3-5-2. That would allow you to have three central midfielders because you could have Fredericks as your wing back, and you could have Garbutt as your wing back, and you still, even though I know Michael Maddow's going to be out, we're going to be talking about him in a second, you could still have three center backs. So what would you do if you went for a 3-5-2?
Well, I think the 3-5-2 is less likely, much as I previously championed this formation, because we've been playing 4-4-2. Much as we don't like it, perhaps, or we think it's short term, it has been effective the last three games. So why change it? But also, I think Michael Maddle has been one of the cornerstones of the defence, and playing 3-5-2 would mean that we'd have to play three defenders, none of them who are Maddle. So you'd look potentially. I suppose you'd have Stearman, and you'd have Byrne, and you'd have Amabieta, perhaps. Or Ream if he's back from injury. So yes, right. In numbers you've got them. Of course, we have Hutchinson available as well, I think. But I just don't see him making the change, much as I obviously enjoy the benefits of it, because in this 3-5-2, of course, we don't have Tom Kearney. So,
but you could have Hyman play that role.
Well, I don't know if Hyman when he's played as a cam before. You know, and having his back to goal sometimes. I'm not sure if it suits Emerson. I think Emerson is better coming from deeper positions, really. And at least last week he was able to come in on his right foot from the wing, and he kind of was fairly at home with that. And I kind of tend to think that we'll see that again tomorrow night. But, yeah, you could obviously play him in there. But I like, when Hyman plays in the centre, I like him to play as a proper central midfielder, not as a not as an advanced midfielder, you know. But, you know, This is, you know, it's all up for conjecture, but I just think based on the last three games and the way it's gone, I think he's going to stick to the same sort of formation.
No, I think you're right. I was just trying to play with it a little bit, David, just trying to think outside the box. And I agree with you on Hyman. I was just thinking he could play that role, but I think he's better suited for deeper. I couldn't agree with you more, but I'm just trying to think how it could work if for say he did something outside the box, which would be going back to the 3-5-2, but you're probably right. I think he's going to be playing a 4-4-2. All right, David, we just talked about the loss of Rohan Ince, which is significant, and I'm glad that we talked about it. But we just mentioned Michael Maddle, and I'm looking at the team news, and it's right on the Fulham website. It says Rohan Ince is ineligible to feature against his parent club, and Tom Kearney, Sakari Matilla, and Michael Maddle are all ruled out through injury. We're going to be talking about Tom Kearney in a second, but let's talk about Michael Maddle. David, how much of a loss is this for this match, and who takes his place?
Yeah, that's obviously it's a loss, because he's been a very consistent performer in defence, but it at least answers the question, I think, as to why he was withdrawn at half-time last week, because it was...
It does.
As a tactical change, it seemed very strange, although we coped okay. I think the answer is there in front of you, really. You know, Stearman stepped in. He had an okay second half, really, I think. Out of the people who were available to play in a 4-4-2 alongside Amabieta, which I assume he would be retained, Stearman is probably, you know, top of the list at the moment. You're not going to play Ream there because he's not that great as a central defender, and he's a left-sided player, as is Byrne, really. I mean, we have seen Byrne play there, so you can't rule it out completely. Hutchison, I think, is a bit out of the frame at the moment. So, yeah, I think you're most likely to see Stearman there, unless, of course, he decides to keep Stearman at right back, which is obviously the other thing, which would then throw this up and think who will he play there. But I would have thought Stearman was the most logical replacement.
And I agree with that, David. And I'm going back to the last match, and I'm glad that you brought up that Michael Maddle went off at halftime. Now we know it was injury-related, obviously, because he's out for this match. I thought Richard Stearman did a nice job. Do you feel more confident now that he could be the potential replacement? Because he's been playing pretty well, David. I think he can do the job. Are you really concerned about the loss of Mantle, or do you think Stearman can fit it?
I'm a bit concerned, to be honest with you. I don't think Stearman is obviously as good, and the reason why he hasn't been first choice is for that reason. He's had a shaky start, but then there's been a lot of change around at the club with different managers, coaches, systems, and everything else. So it's not easy for all the players. But he was kind of brought in along with Tim Ream to be our new sort of star centre back partnership. Never really hit it off. Didn't correct any of the problems that we had. So I have to say that I think with Stearman in the team, we're weaker than if Maddow was in the team. But on saying that, I don't think the situation is different. It depends who you put there. I mean, whether you put Bairn there, whether you put Hutchison there, or whether you put Ream there even, I don't think that it changes the situation. Probably Stearman is the best of the rest, I would say, at this time to play the right centre-back role.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, let's talk about one other player, Tom Kearney. And I talked to you about this on the last show, you really didn't want to talk too much about it because obviously Fulham won. But Tom Kearney's out again. The logical replacement seems like it would be Emerson Hyman. But how much of a loss do you think Tom Kearney will be against Brighton and Hove Albion?
Well, the thing is that Kearney obviously has his qualities. We don't have any other player really in the club who is like Tom Kearney, not really. As to doing his role, there are, other people have tried playing there. But I think last week, Emerson Hyman did a good impression of Tom Kearney, that, he did all his dangerous stuff when he came in off the wing. Okay, it's like a mirror image because he's coming in from the left rather than Kearney coming in from the right. But, what Tom Kearney gives you sometimes in attacking qualities, you lose sometimes in defensive qualities. He's not the best getting back. He's the best getting his foot in the tackle. I think Emerson, does give you a little bit more in that one. Perhaps, he doesn't have Kearney's, silky skills, perhaps, but he's more than capable, Emerson, in putting a good through ball through. We've seen that on many occasions. And so I think he's probably a little bit more of a rounded player than Kearney, that he can track back a bit more. And although he's not giant in stature, he's not afraid to go into tackle and get the ball as well. So I think, it's probably in terms of looking to play a slightly more defensive thing, especially away from home, he probably gives you a little bit more defensively and not a lot less attack-wise.
Okay, very good there, David. It's interesting because they're not, like you said, they are different types of players, but actually, like you mentioned, Emerson Hyman did a nice job filling in for him, and I think he can in this next match. And, it was good to see him get the winning goal and actually put out a very good performance. All right, my friend, before we break down this match, I have one other topic that I was just thinking about, just thinking of things that we could talk about. We're almost to the end of the season. I was trying to think of players that overexceeded my expectations for them whenever they started with Fulham. It could be someone that came in January. It could be someone that started from the beginning of the season. Which player stands out to you? Again, it's not the best player. It's the player that you had a certain expectation for, and he has highly exceeded it.
None of them.
Okay. There's no one.
I mean, obviously, I think Ross McCormack is living up to his expectations now, He's not a one-season wonder. He had a slow start with us. Perhaps he had a little bit of a slow start this season again, but, he's been producing the goods and the goals. It doesn't lie. The stats don't lie again on this one. So, and I think, Moussa Dembele started to live up to his expectation a bit. We've always said that we think that, he's got the potential to be a very natural goal scorer. And it's not a fluke that he's got 14 goals in the league, I think it is, 16 overall perhaps. He's there in the right place at the right time. His finishing hasn't always been perfect, but in the main, he's done his job very, very well. So I think he's living up to his he's building a little bit now. Perhaps for a while, you know, we had so much hope for him because of, you know, his prowess in the under-18s. He didn't initially kind of transfer this over to senior level, but yeah, he's coming up on the goods now. But you know,
okay,
who could you say really has over exceeded your expectations? I don't know.
I have two. I have two, David.
Tell me yours, and I'll tell you whether I agree or not.
Okay. First one is Ryan Tunnicliffe, and I'll explain why I'm saying Ryan Tunnicliffe, because last season wasn't really a great season for Ryan Tunnicliffe. He did well at Blackburn on loan, remember? But, you know, and we heard all these good things about him at Blackburn, and it didn't really materialize last season. He was okay, but this season I thought, especially in the first half of the season, he was one of our best players. And, David, when he went out, Fulham definitely missed Ryan Tunnicliffe. So he has exceeded my expectations. The other player I'm going to say is Michael Maddel, and that's the reason why I said coming in January, because you know, I didn't know what to expect. I had heard these good things about Michael Maddel, but to come in and do the job that he did, it definitely exceeded my expectations. I was hoping for someone that would be decent. I think he's been more than decent. I think he's been very good. I think he really has been a very good central defender, so he has exceeded my expectations. Those are my two players.
No, it's fair enough. I wouldn't say either has exceeded my expectation. You know,
okay.
Tunnicliffe came with a good pedigree for Manchester United. He was meant to be, you know, a good box-to-box midfielder, you know, full of energy and stuff, and we've seen that most certainly. I mean, he's not obviously the most silky player, the most classy player. He sometimes is a bit rash in his challenges, but I think he's had a good, you know, solid run in the main, especially when he plays in sort of more of his favoured position. But I don't think he's exceeded my expectation. I think he's starting, again, he's living up to the fact that he's, you know, what we've heard from other clubs, the Blackburn, and, you know, and from his days at Manchester United. Maddel as well. I mean, Maddel came with a very high reputation. You know, really, he's meant to be a great player in Austria. My concern, as you know, was that would he be able to make the transition to the Championship? Would his height count against him? So, in fact, you know, my concern with Maddel was that he wouldn't live up to the billing. But I think, you know, he's proved that he can live up to the billing, and he's been a very solid performer so far. But I wouldn't say he's exceeded our expectation because, you know, he's still been part of a defence of leaked goals. We haven't had many clean sheets. And, you know, he's done his job quite well. But really, you know, at a level that we're playing at, I mean, he's there or thereabouts. I don't know if he's good enough, you know, to make the step up to the Premier League level, for example. Perhaps, you know, over time that he could be, but, you know, I think he's done well, but I don't think he's exceeded what I would expect or we'd expect from him. We wanted defenders to come in who would shore up the defence, and in the main, they've disappointed. I mean, Ashley Richards hasn't made any change to defence. Spearman hasn't really. You know, Tim Ream hasn't really. They've all come in, and we've been underwhelmed with all of them, I think. You could
correct.
Say that.
Correct.
Pretty much. You've been underwhelmed with
yeah.
them. Michael Maddel is the first one we're not underwhelmed with. I wouldn't say I was overwhelmed with him, but I'm certainly not underwhelmed with him. He's come in at last, and he's a solid sort of no-nonsense player. He seems to read the game pretty well, and he makes up for his lack in height with, you know, the way that he goes about things. And so, yeah, he's done well. But I wouldn't say he's a superstar or anything. You know, he's come in on a loan, basically, with a future transfer, which I assume is not a great fee, you know. It's difficult coming from, you know, European football into the Championship. It's a tough league still. But they've both done well this season, but not exceptionally well, I wouldn't say. Not more than you would hope for a player at this level.
Okay. I wasn't thinking of either one, obviously, on a superstar level. I was just thinking of where my mindset was on both players. And I'm just saying, for me, I was thinking that Ryan Tunnicliffe would be a decent player. I think he's exceeded that. I think he showed how valuable he can be for Fulham Football Club, so that's why I'm saying he exceeded my expectations. And Michael Maddel, I was just hoping that he could help shore up, and he's done that, but I think he's done even more than that. I think he's been a true leader back there as well. So I think he's exceeded my expectations. I see where you're coming from on that, David. All right, my friend, let's let's now get into our breakdown of this match. Let me share some information with you about Brighton Hove Albion. I have a good amount of information to share with you. I've got information from WhoScored.com. I'm also going to share some information with you from our friend Raphael Geller in Israel, who actually follows very closely Brighton Hove Albion. I asked him a few questions, and we got some answers from him, and I'm going to share that with you as well. But let's start with some info from our friends at WhoScored.com. Let's start with Brighton. They are currently third in the league. They have 21 wins, 15 draws, 5 losses. They've scored 58. They've only given up 39. They're on a plus 19 goal differential. They're on 78 points. Fulham, currently 17th. We have 11 wins, 14 draws, 16 losses. We've scored 63. We've given up 67. And we're on a minus 4 goal differential and on 47 points. Again, this information is from WhoScored.com. Strengths, very strong at counterattacks. This is Brighton. Finishing scoring chances, attacking down the wings, strong at both of those two things. Weaknesses, avoiding individual errors, defending counterattacks, defending set pieces, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas. They're very weak at avoiding offside and protecting the lead. Their style of play, they play possession football, and they definitely have a consistent first 11. I also want to say, David, when I watched video, and I watched a good amount of video, they are excellent on set pieces, on scoring on set pieces. They are phenomenal. This is something that we really have to look out for tomorrow. Whenever there's a set piece, you've got to hold your breath because they are very good. But they are also weak, according to what I saw, on defending set pieces. So it's basically a double-edged sword there. When it comes to set pieces, they're strong. They're strong scoring, but defending, they are weak. So just wanted to mention that as well. All right, my friend, before we go on any further, what are your thoughts of the information I just shared with you?
Well, it's interesting because, the one thing that I kind of stuck in my mind, not sure why out of everything you said, was about they're good on counterattacks. That makes them sort of set up to be, a good away side, perhaps. Of course, we have to cast our mind a long way back to the start of the season here where, they were perhaps somewhat fortuitous to gain, a late win against us at the Cottage. But, the boot's on the other foot now. We're the away team. They're the home team. If we play this solid kind of two banks of four type, fairly defensive setup, then, we're not really geared up to be throwing men forward and stuff. So, we're not going to be playing into their hands, hopefully, of the counter-attacks. I mean, that's, I think, part of what Slavisa is trying to do here with, the way he set us up is to make us strong, to stop teams walking through us or getting past us and things. So hopefully that side of their strength will be nullified and we can play like the away team and, if anything, let them make the mistake. Let us catch them on the counter-attack. So that was the main thing that stood out from what you said, really. But obviously, they're third. Table doesn't lie and all that. They've had a very good season. Chris Hughton's done really well. And they're in a position where, as I said at the start of the show, they've still got a chance of automatic promotion. They've got a good chance, really. And so they're really desperate for these points, So that
yes.
could leave them open potentially to errors, If we're clever and everything, if we frustrate them, if we could nick a goal, get an early lead, then, they'll have to sort of come forward and potentially leave themselves exposed. But then, if we're playing a fairly negative lineup, which I don't know if we will or not, but if we do, we might not have, the pace or the right people to exploit them. But saying that anyway, we have at least been better in the last few games in terms of, the number of shots we've been having. So, by hook or by crook, things have been coming together. So it's going to be an interesting kind of sort of juxtaposition of the needs of both teams, really, as in terms of, we want to try and get the points. They definitely need the points. A draw would be a lot better result for us than it would for them, I would imagine.
Correct. And what's interesting, David, because everything you just said, I really think is going to be backed up by some of the information I'm going to share with you, especially from Raphael Geller. The one thing that I will tell you is that this is a real team. This is a team that plays together. This is a team that is waiting for you to make a mistake. We've seen this before. So this is really a match where you have to be at your best, and you have to wait till they make a mistake. And they don't make many mistakes, and you're going to have to take advantage of their mistakes. This is a match where you have to play, I hate to say it, mistake-free football. It's going to be difficult. This is a tough opponent that just wants you to beat yourself. And you can't beat yourself, or you're going to lose. All right, David, I'm going to share with you some more information from WhoScored.com. This is stats breakdown between the teams. Let's see what you learn here. Let's start with possession. Fulham are fourth in the league at 52.6%. Brighton are ninth at 51.5%. Shots per game, Fulham are 12th at 12.4. Brighton are 6th at 13.3. Passing success, teams are pretty much even here. Fulham are 8th at 75.4. And Brighton are 7th at 75.5. Aerials 1, Fulham are 14th at 20.5, and Brighton are 17th at 19.1. Crosses per game, Fulham are 21st with 18. Brighton are 11th with 21. Long balls, Fulham are 12th with 84 long balls per game. Brighton are 7th with 88. Short balls, Fulham are 6th with 379 short balls per game. And Brighton are 8th at 352. What's interesting, David, before I get your thoughts, is that the stats breakdown are actually pretty even between the two teams, which I find fascinating. What are your thoughts about the stats breakdown?
No, I was waiting for you to come out with some devastating stats that showed Brighton were, you know, way ahead of us in certain categories. But nothing really kind of stood out and punched me in the face there. You know, I'm not sure I'm kind of a... Is there something to punch you in the face there from that? Well, slap me in the face. Let's not have punches.
No, David, there isn't.
Slap in the face. Not really anything to slap me in the face. Yeah, you could say that they're ahead of us on the long ball, but again, you know, I don't necessarily think that's a positive attribute anyway. In fact, the fact that, you know, we've already said that they're a counter-attacking team, therefore, yeah, you could expect them to be sort of someone who uses a long ball. They look to play a quick ball over the top to catch people out. So that's not a big surprise for me, really. But no, it's kind of the big surprise, I suppose, is, you know, the gulf, you know, in the positions of the two teams in the table. When you look at the stats, because you would think these two teams were closer together in the league from what you said.
That's right, Dave. That's what's interesting about this, is that the stats between the two teams are very close, and you would think. You know, again, if you didn't know the table, you know, like you said, the table doesn't lie. It doesn't lie. We are where we are. But if you look at these stats, the teams look fairly even. That's what's interesting about that stats breakdown. That's what I got out of it. All right, my friend, one last thing before we go into our breakdown of this match. I want to share some information from our friend Raphael Geller, BBC World Football Correspondent in Israel. I sent him a couple questions because he follows Brighton Hove Albion very closely, so I wanted to get his thoughts on this match, his thoughts on Brighton Hove Albion. My first question to Raphael was, how would you describe the style of play of Brighton Hove Albion? His answer, they play as a team and are a perfect example of a club that doesn't have any big stars, just a ton of great players clicking together. My next question was, for Fulham, who are the Brighton players they need to contain in this match most? He says, Tomar Hemed, their leading goal scorer, goes through stretches where he is in great form, but sometimes disappears. Midfield is led by Dale Stevens and Barham Kyle, and defense is led by Lewis Dunk. Okay, what do Fulham need to do to beat Brighton Hove Albion? His answer, play a perfect match. Brighton are looking for promotion. And then I finally asked him for a prediction, and he said, sorry, my friend, 2-1 to Brighton. That was his prediction. So just wanted to share that information to you from our friend Raphael Gellin, and just so you know, their leading goal scorer, Tomer Hamed, has 13 goals, and Bobby Zamora also has 7 goals, but it does not look like he's going to play. But David, I always get a little nervous when I hear players are out, but reportedly he's not going to play. Bobby Zamora supposedly is not going to play, but who knows? I guess we'll find out tomorrow. All right, David, what are your thoughts about the information that Raphael Gellin shared?
Well, I have to say, I think I agree with most of it, really. I feel that his prediction is probably somewhere around the ballpark, as you'd say, where it's going to be. You know, the thing that we have in our favour is obviously that potentially, you know, we have better goal scorers than they do. Certainly, you know, our second goal scorer is better than their top goal scorer. But I think they're probably a team that can score more goals around the park. As you said, they don't have a big star. I think, you know, they can score from all areas. So whilst they haven't got perhaps someone with, you know, the calibre of McCormack and his goals, they've got lots of people who can chip in with goals. And as you say, that's what makes them more of a team, perhaps. We are still very reliant, obviously, on one or two players. I mean, I don't know who our next highest goalscorer after Dembele would be, really. I suppose would it be someone like Tom Kearney? I'm not sure. Who's got about five or six goals.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who really has scored goals for us. I mean, there's been the odd one chipped in, you know. We've had Michael Maddle scored a goal, and we've had Garbutt scored a goal. And I'm trying to think of, I can't really think of many people who have scored goals. I mean, Tunisia scored one or two, didn't they, I think, you know. But no one really has been scoring goals apart from the main two up front. So that's, you know, that's the positive and the negative for Fulham, really, because, you know, that these two guys, given the chance, can put the ball in the net. But if they're kept quiet, then we can struggle, perhaps, to find, you know, regular goal scorers on the rest of the pitch. So that's the difference between the teams, really. So it's going to be, I think, if Moose and Dembele, I'm pretty sure they're going to be the sort of Moose and Dembele. So is that Ross and Moose or Ross and Dembele? I was doing a bit of a Brangelina. I had a Brangelina moment for a minute there, I think. But
definitely.
Yeah, those two. I did a Goldman, as you'd call it.
Exactly.
If those two are kept quiet, then I think it's going to be a tough game for Fulham. If they don't keep them quiet, it's a game we can win. But, you know, the trouble is, it's, you know, for Brighton, it's an easy game. They know which two guys they've got to get at. For Fulham, it's not so simple as that. We don't know which two guys we've got to take out of the game. Because, you know, there's other suspects in there. Anyone could pop up with a goal, theoretically. I know it's not as straightforward as that, but theoretically, you know, I think we have to be on our guard. It's easy sometimes when you have a known target because you can try and neutralise that target. But when you've got 11 targets, perhaps, you know, it's a more difficult game.
Yes.
Obviously, I'm sure they've watched videos and studied players and they know what player strengths are. But still, you know, that's a tough thing. For Brighton, they've got an easy job, perhaps, or easier job, because they need to identify the targets and how to neutralise them, how to, you know, what their weak points are. But for Fulham, I don't think it's so, because, you know, they can score goals from set pieces as well. We've seen that happening, and that's, you know, that's one of our weaknesses. And so, you know, we've really got to be on our guard tomorrow night.
I totally agree, and the best word I can use to describe Brighton and Hove Albion, besides saying that they're a team, they're balanced, David. They're balanced. It's difficult to beat a team that is so balanced that can beat you in different ways, and that's what this team can do. Like Rafael Guerreiro said, there's no superstar here. They're not relying on one or two players like Fulham. Fulham are really relying a great deal on two players up front. Not that Emerson Hyman can't get the occasional goal, or we've seen with Scotty Parker. It can happen, but Brighton and Hove Albion are much more balanced, and from any match they can get, you know, they can get goals from anywhere, and that's what makes them harder to beat, I think. You know, Brighton and Hove Albion, you know, if they take away McCormack and Dembele, that could really hurt, and that's going to be a thing for Fulham. It's how do they adjust to what Brighton and Hove Albion do to take away those two players, you know, because they might have to find another way, and that's what's going to be interesting about this match, because Chris Hughton and his team, they are a true team, and that's what's different. We're not a true team yet. I mean, I think we have the makings of one, but not one that plays together like this. This is 11 players all on the same page. We're starting to get there, but they've been doing it for much longer than Fulham have recently. All right, David. Everything said, who are your key players tomorrow for Fulham?
For Fulham? I think,
yes.
It's going to really depend on who the team is. That's, you know, it's how long is a bit of string, because I think it, you know, it could come from anywhere on the park, but I think we've got to tomorrow start at the back. So I think the centre backs, have really got, you know, they're going to have to be on their guard tomorrow night. No getting beaten over the top with long balls or through, you know, through balls. So I think Amber Bieta and Stearman, I would assume that to be, to be really key to us. And also the people in front of them, and that's going to be Parker and either Baird or Tunnicliffe, I would imagine. So it's actually those kind of, it's the spine of the team again. That's the real,
okay.
That's where we really have to win the game by being tight there. And if they can keep a shutout, keep Bryant at bay, then other people come into the game, and we're talking about the two strikers.
Sure.
You know, and potentially people like Heinemann and maybe LBC if he plays, you know, to take the game to Brighton a bit as well. So we can have four people to take the game to Brighton and the rest, you know, to keep Brighton out.
Okay, very good, David. And that's going to lead me to ask you how Fulham win this match. I just want to give you my theory. It's really just counterattack when you have the opportunity to take your chances. And you better score on your chances. But I know it's going to sound boring, but a similar way that they played against Preston North End, I think they need to frustrate this team. I think they need to just frustrate them. I watched the match last night. I know it's not a very good comparison, but I'm just trying to go on the idea of frustrating a team. I watched Atletico Madrid frustrate the hell of Barcelona. Obviously, these teams are not on that level, but I'm talking about just to be able to frustrate this team and then counterattack quickly, and you need to score when you get your opportunities. That's what I think they need to do tomorrow to win this match. What are your thoughts?
No, I think that's where I'm going with it as well, is to frustrate them, you know, let them make the mistakes and then catch them out. But I think, you know, it could also, you know, the best thing to do to win the game really would be to score first, I think. Score
Correct.
First and then make them chase the game. You know, giving you the chance to catch them on the break again, perhaps, or potentially, you know, for them to open themselves up at least. If not, you know, I don't think we're going to be playing the sort of that kind of fast, expansive football, because that's not really us anyway. But, you know, we can provide a good counter-attacking game at times, but to do that, we need to have a firm defence, a solid back four, two banks of four, really. Get a goal if we can somehow, and then, as I say, you know, not so much park the bus, but, you know, be tight. Don't let them back into the game. Try and catch them out again.
Okay, very good. And that's kind of where I'm going on. I'm glad that you talked about the first goal, because that goes with my theory about the Preston North End match, because they got the first goal, David. I know that Preston North End then got the equalizer, but eventually Fulham got that second goal. But I think that strategy worked. But I think it's important, I agree with you, it's important, especially on the road, to get that first goal. If they get that first goal, then they can really put the heat on Brighton and Hove Albion. They could be feeling some pressure, because, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, it's an important match for Fulham. They're not safe yet. But this is a team that's trying to get automatic promotion. They desperately need all 3 points. If you get up on them, they could really get a little bit nervous, and they could potentially make another mistake, and the game could open up. So I agree with you, David. It really is. That first goal is going to be vital. If they score that first goal, they have a chance to at least get something out of this match. That's the way I'm looking at it. All right, my friend, we only have about 10 minutes left. Let's talk about your starting 11. I'm curious what you would do if you were Slavisa.
I think we'll see, obviously, Bettinelli in goal. That one's probably the easiest one to pick at the moment. As I said, I think we're going to stick to the same 4-4-2 formation. It's worked well the last three games. Well, so it's worked well. It's been effective anyway. Whether you like it or not, or whether it's your cup of tea, you know, three wins on the bounce, you can't really argue with that. So who on earth would change it from that situation? I don't think anyone would. So the 4-4-2, I think, as I said before, Amer Bieta and Stearman in the middle. I think that's the most likely pairing. The two fullbacks are the slightly harder one, because Garbutt came in. I don't think he was fantastic, but it depends on the availability of Ream. I could actually see Ream coming back in if he's fit. If not, Garbutt, I think, would continue there. On the right-hand side, well, I'm hoping we'll see Fredericks, because obviously, he offers you that chance to break away and catch them out. But you know, knowing Slavisa, he could do a Felix on us here and pull a surprise out of the hat. We could even see our old friend Ashley Richards back if he's looking for
a
right back.
Oh wow! Could you imagine that?
I know. Well, the thing is, I'm thinking he's going to play Stearman in the middle.
I agree with you.
So who's he going to play at right back? Will he trust Fredericks to start? I mean, there's nothing wrong with his game particularly, and he had a great little cameo when he came on last week. And I hope he does, because I think, as I say, from the start, he gives us that chance to try and do something different. But who else could play there? Maybe Richards, I don't know. That's going to be the one. Central midfield, Scott Parker, I think. And it's going to be interesting. Actually, I think I would like to see him start LVC if he's fit enough on the right, because I think he offers us the best balance between protecting the back four and also a chance to get away. And, you know, if he plays LVC there, I think he's more likely to play someone like Richards or someone who he sees as being a more defensive player at right back, because LVC at least gives you something attack-wise. So, you know, you could see LVC there coupled with Richards. Then again, you know, I think LVC and Fredericks would be a fantastic attacking combination if you could
have
it. But I'm not sure if he wants to be, you know, that gambling with you know, Fredericks, who doesn't necessarily last 90 minutes, and LVC has just been back. But if we see LVC on the right, I think we'll see Tunnicliffe and Parker in the middle. I think the one certainty for me would be with Emerson Hyman. I think, you know, why is he going to change? He had an excellent second half. He came into the game really well. You know, great winning goal. Why would he change that? I don't think he's going to change that. Emerson Hyman to sort of play on the left there. Of course, you know, I said that these are the most obvious ones, but the most obvious ones probably are really, of course, Ross and McCormick up front. That was a deliberate goalman, though. Musa and Ross up front, I think. So it's just, say, so if he doesn't want to start LVC, he'll play Tunnicliffe right, and I think he'll play Baird in the middle there. The right back is, you know, all conjectures. He could play someone else centre back and put Stearman at right back. But I hope we see Fredericks there, but I wouldn't even be surprised if Richards starts.
Oh, wow, David. Bringing up Ashley Richards, I've not heard that name in a while. You could end up being right. That's an interesting theory that you have. We'll see how this all plays out when the starting 11 comes out on Friday. All right, David, let's go to predictions. Let's start with the Cottage Talk Twitter page. 146 votes. Very interesting voting here. Win, 37%. Draw, 38%. Loss, 25%. Very interesting. Okay, let's now go to the predictions on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. I have a good amount of them. Let's start with Stephen O'Keefe. Draw, 2-2. Jason Burcheat, 1-1. Chris Davidson, unfortunately, a defeat, 2-0. Gary Cooper, we like winning, 2-1, and we're on a roll, so 2-1 to Fulham. Steve Butters, 2-2 draw. David John Wilson, 2-2. Marcus McAllis, 2-1 win again. Tom Ward, 2-1 to Fulham. Charlie Bevan, 1-0 to the Whites. Richard Bamber, 1-1 draw. Very interesting. Okay. David, it's time for your prediction.
I'm afraid I was in the 25%, Russ.
That's okay, Dave. David, you're on a roll. You have to predict a loss because that's a good sign now.
Yeah, okay. I just think that on the night it's too important for Brighton and they're gonna be strong and up for this game. And they really, you know, they want to avenge last year's win that we got down there. And I think, you know, they want to get the sort of the advantage on their rivals, you know, get in first at the start of the weekend. Yeah, I think Friday night has been a bit of a jinx for us as well, to be honest with you. Although we're going to have a good following there, I just fear that they're going to be really up for it. They want to get those 3 points on the board before everyone else does, put the pressure on the teams around them. So I just fear they're going to be so much up for it that, you know, they're going to catch us out, or we're not. I know, you know, just with the, you know, the slight changes, with missing Maddell, missing Ince, perhaps we're not going to be quite as strong through the middle as we have been. So 2-1 to Brighton for me.
Okay, and I certainly understand that, David, and I understand Raphael Geller's 2-1 prediction as well. Everything points to that. Everything points to a Brighton victory. Everything that I've read, I watched video, everything in my senses, everything tells me I should be predicting 2-1 to Brighton to go along with you, David. But you know what? I can't do it. I want four in a row. I'm going 2-1 to Fulham, and 2 goals by Ross McCormack, David.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. No good. Oh, well. That's
well,
done it. Who
listen,
knows now?
Who knows? Who knows? Listen, David, I've been on a positive roll. They've been winning, and unfortunately, you've been wrong. But in a way, you win anyways because Fulham win. So that's why I was kind of hoping that you would be predicting a Fulham loss because you've been consistently wrong lately.
All right, well, I've been listening to Briefcase Ben too much. I need to take control of my own scenario, you know. But yeah, that's right. It's a no lose situation for me. So you know, I predict So if I'm wrong, I'm happy anyway. So and if I'm
exactly.
right, I'm happy, obviously. So yeah,
you win either way, David. You win either way.
So basically, I'm right anyway. Then you're saying, yeah?
Because David Hulley's always right.
So even if I'm wrong, I'm right, yeah?
Exactly. Listen, I've known you now for several years. If there's one thing that I've learned is that David Hulley's always right. I have now come to that conclusion. I'm done. David Hulley's always right. Okay, you happy now?
Yeah, well, we don't have to fight about it anymore, do we? But, you know, the one thing that is true, my friend, is if we do, and if I'm wrong and we can get a win tomorrow night, I'm going to be hiding, you know, because that would be one less for you, and we've still got
one more
to face at home. So I'm going to go
more.
Hiding for the rest of the season, I think, you know.
Oh, boy, David, I'm telling you, if they win two more, you will never hear the end of it. You already know that. But listen, we only got 3 minutes left. Any final thoughts before we go? Great show, by the way. Any final thoughts?
No, if we win two more, I'm going to go to the nearest hospital and check myself in, and I'll send you a picture of me with the men in the white coats, yeah?
Okay, David. Very good. Very good. All right. Well, listen, it's time to wrap up the show. This was a great episode. Thank you so much. And anyone that's listening, please do also check out the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. We recorded an episode yesterday. That it was actually, I say, it was our best episode that I've done with Matt. We're now up to 19 episodes, and I thought this was by far our best. So please do check that out as well. David, it's time to wrap up the show. For David Hulley, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cotter's Talk. Cheers, David.
Cheers, Russ. See you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.